One thing we decided is that we need to change the schedule of the meetings of the presidency, the governing board, because we are meeting every Thursday. Now we're going to try every other Thursday and then once a month, and then figure out how we can have fewer items to discuss and be better prepared. So one of the and I think one of the things that we started was the a disciplinary process or procedure against those who are trying to undermine the internal structure, processes, communications, of decision making, of platform for progress. And there are three processes, disciplinary, that we started. And on the last meeting, we used to define the committee, the commission that actually institutes the process, the proceedings, and conducts the whole thing, and it comes back to the presidency with the recommendation. With the recommendations, and then we then act based on that. What is a good thing is that we are starting now to modify some processes because of the troubles in the inside that we are having. We are starting to communicate better. All of our from every meeting of the presidency, as I call it, the governing board, we now issue a summary of everything that was discussed and concluded or decided, and that goes to our members. We also started having regular conversations with our regional boards. We expected now that their representative, the president of the regional board or regional boards, will actually inform them, but that hasn't been happening consistently in all of them. So now we as a body, this presidential governing body, we establish these regular monthly meetings with those regional boards. Also, monthly meetings with our city or municipality, what do you call it, or county boards, council members. We have now 17 of them, so we established monthly meetings with them. Just to communicate better, we also realized that we don't have the ground game covered, meaning we are not talking to the people on the ground, city councils, municipality council, the members throughout, and those who are following us, but perhaps are not directly members of the Platform for Progress. Anyways, something good out of all of this is that we are trying to be better with our processes and procedures. At the same time, this internal struggle continues. Everything is being used against the governing body, presidential governing body, and me, because that's the group that is really that really wants to take down the whole thing just because it's a threat. Unfortunately, there are people on the inside who don't see how deeply they got embedded, and the moles, and how organized they are. So they are behaving as if there are two different approaches, and let's talk or talk with each other, try to improve the situation, not knowing that you can talk to somebody if we all had a similar goal, then we could talk to each other and figure out the best way to achieve the goal. But we have different goals. There's no way we can discuss and find a common ground, because there was none to begin with. Tuesday, 2 days ago, I had a visit to Gračanica, one of the most industrious cities in Bosnia and Herzegovina, doing really well. Many companies successful worldwide in terms of manufacturing steel, plastics, furniture are there. And I went to visit a gentleman who is a friend of the of Platform for Progress and a personal friend. Talked about Platform, visited the company, the factory. Then had meetings with some of his friends, talking about potential, trying to figure out how to improve the financial situation of Platform for Progress. And then we published information from that from the visit to his factory. And that was used by some people in the same city, Gračanica, people who are somehow in that group of people who are criticizing anything and everything, just to show that the things could be done differently. They started criticizing how it is that I could visit the city without informing them or letting them know and inviting them to the meetings and so on. And so basically, any idea, any initiative, no matter how positive or forward-looking it is, or how constructive it is to improve the financial or political position of the Platform for Progress, is being used in a negative context and to incite a different kind of thinking. At the same time, we are learning how to communicate better with the general public. Recently, there was a decision on the appeal to the original decision against Ratko Mladic as a war criminal for inciting the genocide in The Hague. And the whole country was waiting for that decision. The original judgment stayed that he should go to prison until the end of his life. People were hoping that they would extend the charge and the designation of genocide to some other cities in Bosnia-Herzegovina. That didn't happen. Obviously, we had to react by issuing a statement. We were late with that. It also shows how we really have to work on our internal processes. Yesterday, we had a first town hall meeting in a while. It was organized in Visoko, a city, a small town close to Sarajevo. That is where the head of our local committee is. He was probably the second youngest candidate for the city council. And he got it. He became a councilman for the city of Visoko. But he's also heading our local board, Platform for Progress, board in Visakha. He organized that town hall meeting. I believe the capacity is like 150 people, but we wanted to have a distance between people, so about 70 something we invited, so that every other seat would be filled, and that's roughly what we got. Yesterday we had three panelists, and the moderator, the MC. The MC was Selma Chatibushich, our city council woman in Tuzla. She's also a member of the presidency, Platform for Progress, representing youth. The panelists were the other councilwoman in Tuzla. She's a doctor, her profession. Her name is Esana Huskanovic, Kavasbashic Huskanovic. The third one was that gentleman, Tarik Halilovic from Visoko. And we talked about economy after COVID-19. But clearly, based on the questions of the audience, from the audience, the daily politics was on everybody's mind, the corruption, the nepotism, and inability to secure vaccinations, inability to protect the people economically or health-wise during these days of pandemic. It was invigorating, it was energizing, simply because we have not done that in a while, and that is our best mode of communication directly with people. Not talking to them, at them, but conversing with them, listening to their opinions, asking, answering their questions, and so on, which gave us enough reasons to think about follow-up, thinking about the next one and the next one and the next one. So on the one hand, we have protests, on the other, we have these town hall meetings. Both of them are somehow communication with citizens. I have thinking of today. I have these monthly meetings with individual meetings with all members of the presidency and. Today one was with a young person who just has a different approach to life, to politics, not to life, to politics, in the sense that he is impatient and he wants things to happen urgently, now, not tomorrow. He said, I have until 22, we're not in power, I'm leaving this country, I don't have time, that's what he said. He also said he wants to be politically pragmatic, do things that are politically savvy for us to win. And so this is the first time I decided to push back. Normally I would understand and try to convince, but slowly. But now I said, listen, there's a red line. We don't want to buy votes. We don't want to deal with people who are dirty in that sense. And I know that it is hard to do politics our way, the clean one. But if we do what they are doing, then there's no reason for us to exist. There are plenty of other options that behave that way. I want them to consider that, if that's the urgency. But we cannot be what we are not. You see, I'm a sad, but that's not politically savvy. We need to really win. And I said, not win at any cost. That is the major difference. And we have to win the right way if you want to change the country, if you want to win at any cost. Then I don't think that there's a place for us. Very interesting conversation, very open, which is what I appreciate from him. But troubling in the sense that it is taking us in a different direction, which I don't think we should go. Of course, it's only one one person's opinion, but that's what's happening. At the same time, there was a meeting of in the Republika Srpska. In one of the previous sessions, I talked about Social Democratic Party of Bosnia and Herzegovina, SDP, that they organized a meeting and 10 parties showed up. They're trying to put together some sort of coalition in a loose, following a loose definition of the word coalition, of pro-Bosnian parties that would act in the entity called Republika Srpska. Instead of fighting with each other, creating framework that they would call platform for something, we'll see. And we are there as well. And this time, the second meeting was held in Banja Luka. The first one was in Sarajevo, organized by SDP. The one in Banja Luka was organized by the SDA, one of the three major parties that I consider to be ethnically based. But even they are a minority in Republika Srpska, so they decided to play, at least for now. They organized the second meeting, and I was just, and I apologize for keeping you wait, but as you were waiting, I was talking to our representative at that meeting, who was informing me about what happened then. And things are proceeding. Documents will be written about the goals, the way decisions are made, what we are trying to accomplish. And the next meeting is going to be most likely be held at our that we will host the third meeting, not in Sarajevo, not in Banja Luka, but in a small town called Kozarac, near a bigger town called Prijedor, which is very close, which is an hour away from the city of Banja Luka. Kozarac is a home to the gentleman that I mentioned earlier, not today, but during our earlier conversations, Yusuf Arifagic, who came from Norway to back to the country, established a large dairy farm, very successful, integrating with his life Bosniaks and Serbs inside Republika Srpska, and Kozarac is in Republika Srpska, like Banja Luka. And so it seems that we will organize the next meeting, and he and I are talking about the details of that meeting itself, when, who, how, why. And I'm glad for that to happen at that time in July. It's going to be mid-July. Diaspora, people from diaspora arrive. They didn't last year because of Corona, but this time they might. And we are trying to figure out how to be constructive partners there. The name of Yusuf Arifagic is important simply because he's going to be our candidate for the vice president of Republika Srpska, representing Bosniaks by the constitution. The president is a Serb of Republika Srpska entity within Bosnia and Herzegovina. He is a Serb, and two vice presidents, one being Bosniak, the other one Croat. So he's going to be our representative, and I hope that this all of these parties will support his candidacy. Whether this will have any consequences for the action of those same parties within Federacija as well, Federation of Bosnia and Herzegovina, I don't know, but we'll see how that will play up or play out. In any case, the situation is such that we are going into the summer. I genuinely hope that the summer will be slower because of the holidays, and that we will have time to rest and regroup so that we can come back in fall and start pushing really hard because the campaign starts really. Then, even though officially it starts only a month before the elections, there are still some rumors that if we don't see any changes to the electoral law, that Croats in Bosnia, some of the Croats in Bosnia want, which is to change the way that the Croat representative in the presidency of Bosnia had to go in a selected or elected. And they are basically threatening to block many processes if those changes don't take place, which could be basically not allocating the money for elections, for the elections in 22, and then they don't actually happen. But we'll talk about it then. So we also are seeing another news in Bosnia-Herzegovina is that there is a new high representative just announced, Mr. Schmidt from Germany. Who will be here sometime in August, I believe, and everybody's trying to figure out how he will govern, if you will, or decide not to at all, which happened with the previous, with his predecessor, whether he's gonna be tough and really directly interfere or just observe and be concerned about the situation in the country. We'll see that. But that is something that is on everybody's mind here in Bosnia-Herzegovina these days, because the such a person has a really high, has not high, but has all the tools available to him or her to introduce any laws, remove anybody from office, anything really to make the country work. And there is some indication that the new high representative, Mr. Christian Schmidt, will be more willing to act more aggressively, and that remains to be seen. But it is something that is really interesting and on everybody's mind. The corona situation is getting better, fewer and fewer people are being affected or die from it. But then again, we'll see what happens now that more vaccinations are being in place, but also rules have been, restrictions have been lifted or relaxed, whether that is going to have any consequence on people around us, we'll see. But
now this individual and I, that can kind of oversee and change things or whatever, this is something, and I can't remember his predecessor, but you had talked about this for the last couple of years, that he's got the opportunity to do something and he never did it. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine that this gentleman's going to be hearing a lot from a lot of people coming up in terms of input as to things that need to be done, changes that need to be made.
Right. Well, his predecessor, and his name is Valentin Inzko.
Inzko,
he's from Austria. Is a very fine gentleman. I've spoken with him on four or five occasions, and every time I had a clear understanding, but more than that, I saw him as an honest, capable, insightful person who truly knows what is happening in Bosnia and Herzegovina, as well as what needed to be done for it to become a better place, more progressive, more prosperous. At the same time, I was also under impression that he does not have free hand to act, that he was not given a green light to act on his convictions. There is something that's called Peace Implementation Committee. European powers are in that, represented on that body. There was no agreement among those members, excuse me, that more forceful action should take place by the high representative in Bosnia and Herzegovina. So I was, that was my impression, that he knows what he needed to do, but he's not allowed to. Whether there's room for an individual to act like the high representative, I really don't know. I cannot tell. I have no privileged information on the dynamics of conversations among the members of the PIC and Mr. Inzko. I believe that he claims that he doesn't have it. He doesn't have it explicitly, but he acts as if he was not given a green light to act. And based on the statements that ambassadors from the countries represented on the PIC have been giving over the years, I would tend to agree with the assessment that he was not given the green light. But this new high representative coming in is sounding more bold, or sounding as a more bold person when it comes to conducting his or dispensing his responsibilities while in that office. Does that indicate that it depends on the person, or does it indicate that there is a new agreement among those members of PIC that a different approach is needed in Bosnia-Herzegovina? I don't know. And everybody in Bosnia-Herzegovina is simply taking that approach, like sit and wait what he will do. And in preparation for his arrival, which is sometime in August, I believe, representatives of these ethnic parties are already making statements that are offensive often, just to position themselves and test the person and synthesize the person, sensitize the person to a different kind of rhetoric, different kind of attitudes, to almost to give him a warning. Listen, this is our land, this is how we talk, this is how we behave, get used to it, we don't think you should be here. Not everybody has the same attitude. Bosniaks want high representative here, knowing that somebody has to protect the country, the other the other two clearly would like to see less and less of the international influence in Bosnia and Herzegovina, hoping that that will give them an opening for different arrangements, territorial, constitutional, political, economic, you name it, in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Does this create yet another opportunity to broach this, the topic of electronic voting with this new individual?
Yes, very good point. And I think that he actually even mentioned it in one of his interviews. And interestingly enough, in our yesterday's conversation, town hall meeting in Visoko, that came out as one of the key solutions to the problems that we are facing in Bosnia and Herzegovina. One of the gentlemen said, listen, you talk about the problems, we know them all. What's the solution? And one of the solutions that I offered was electronic voting. And my explanation was this: with electronic voting, you have automatically responsibility brought back into the brought back front and center in Bosnia and Herzegovina, because right now, if they steal elections, they don't have to worry about your attitude, you as a voter, because I don't care, I'm gonna get as many votes as I need because I steal elections. That's how they think. But if I have to think about your true opinion, because it's electronic, because I cannot change it, modify it. Yes, there are other ways of cheating by dead people voting, by having what they call a Bulgarian train. One person comes in and takes the ballot, comes in with the ballot, goes in, takes the ballot, puts in the ballot you already have prepared, but this one new comes out with a new one and gives a person to fill out the way they want it filled out, and they come back and they do it multiple times, fake IDs of the dead people and so on. But still, if there is a concept of electronic voting, there is a concept of, yes, I can lose elections if I don't perform well, they have to worry about the well-being of the citizens, and therefore they have to become better, more responsible. If they are better, more responsible, better representatives of the people, there will be less corruption, less nepotism. You cannot put your person to lead a publicly owned company just because from the same party. You will put somebody who will know what to do for that company to succeed. Good for economy, judicial system, if you are seen as influencing unduly judicial system, people will vote you out, and you want the judicial system to be more fair. Suddenly we have better judicial system, more objective, more justice, that will protect investments, investors, economy starts moving up, and so on. So there is one thing to do today. I would say that is the electronic voting record, just to bring the sense of justice back into the system. And people have to start feeling that they have to do something once they get elected, not just collect the benefits, material or otherwise. So yes, I was glad that that very same question that you pointed out was brought yesterday in the discussion, and people agreed generally with that statement.
And just one other one, just to backtrack to the beginning where you were talking about coming up with disciplinary actions against some of the moles that have been identified within the platform. How does that process work in terms of once they've been identified, are they still allowed and there's disciplinary action, are they still allowed to remain in the positions that they hold?
Well, the disciplinary actions usually proceed this way. When you start it, you suspend, you freeze somebody, or suspend or freeze, however, somebody's membership in any body, governing body, and therefore they are not, for the duration of the trial, they are not members of that. They are members of Platform for Progress, but they don't have decision-making capacity, responsibilities. The once the decision is made, decision could be decision of that court, disciplinary commission. That with that recommendation, they come to the presidency, and then we decide what to do with it, confirm it, or require less. We can go up to what they suggested. One of the consequences could be their expulsion from Platform for Progress, therefore everything else ceases to be. Could be acquittal, that not enough evidence that they've done anything bad. Could also be something in between, like warning, verbal or written, whatever. I don't know, but there's a range of possible outcomes.
And just one final one. It just, with all the distractions, I mean, the internal issues, the moles, people inside that aren't necessarily trying to bring you down but think they got a better idea than you do, just everything that's, do you feel that you're still able to remain on track here in terms of your messaging and the things that need to be done leading up to the election, or is it just a lot to try to grasp at one time?
Well, I must admit that it takes its toll, because it's, and then I mentioned it earlier, it's a constant battle just to stay afloat in terms of daily activities. All the time you're just dealing with those internal issues while you're trying to pay attention and act on the outside of the organization, trying to help the country, trying to assess the political situation, prepare yourself for, position yourself, your party, us for success in 2022. Sometimes you wonder what will it take to get over this period so you can focus on the next one. But when you see the enthusiasm and commitment of those true, what we called sparks or members, who truly believe in the idea and want it realized, you see their smiles and open, bright eyes despite the internal struggle, but ready to fight within their realm for the benefit of the country, then you regain that initial enthusiasm and determination to succeed. So the determination is always there. None of these things can change that or soften it or question it. But what happens is that you are constantly adjusting the aim, because you're less sure now, and I am less sure, that the pool of capable and determined people is large enough. I'm questioning that these days, given the state of mind of Bosnians and Herzegovinians after this war, and how much damage it did to the society, how much trust got lost, how much education was lost, how completely changed the fabric of the society is. You really wonder how long it will take. And that's what I'm grappling with right now. Given that the pool is not of the quality, politically savvy, sound, ready activists, is smaller than I thought, which is reflected in those, in these internal struggles, which are petty struggles. Mm-hmm. For it's about a person, about him or her or whatever, instead of the higher goals. Constantly revising your assessment, changing the strategy to figure out how do we get there regardless, in spite of that. People often ask me, are you tired? Are you thinking about giving up on all of this and going back home because of all of these unjust things that are happening to you? And I say, and I have to say, and I mean it, no, I'm not going to give up. And I know that this is par for the course. It is expected in a criminal mafia style dirty politics that is in Bosnia and Herzegovina. But at the same time, you cannot say that it doesn't matter, that it doesn't affect you, because you're spending the time, you are dreading the next phone call, because you know it's most likely it's going to be about yet another problem that's unnecessary. There's no other way just to keep going, but it used to be more fun, definitely.